Go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy to get 20% off your first month of cognitive behavioural therapy, with weekly sessions online with a therapist, in addition to worksheets, a journal, meditation and yoga videos, and unlimited messaging. There's strong evidence that CBT can help people who hoard, and accessing therapy online can be affordable and accessible. Find out more and get your discount at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/online-therapy.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. I am drowning in stuff and trying to find a way out. Listen as I explore the issues and delve deep as somebody profoundly affected by hoarding disorder. Find out more, including links to subscribe to the podcast and all of my social media at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. Finally, I am not a doctor. I am just a hoarder doing her best. So do seek professional support if and when you need it. Hey, how are you? I am going to start with a story, and it's the reason that I'm not starting with a success of the week and a weird dilemma of the week. I had a success of the week and a weird dilemma of the week, but I wrote down the weird dilemma of the week and not the success of the week. And can I remember what it is? No, I can't. So I have been sitting here for a good half hour, headphones on, microphone plugged in, not hitting record and starting to record this episode, but instead being furious with myself about how useless and rubbish and pointless I am, because I know there's a success of the week. I just can't remember what it was. And if there just hadn't been a success, that would have been okay. I'd have skipped the slot for the week. But I know there was one. And so angry with myself for not writing it down and forgetting it. And then I realized that sitting here being angry with myself is exactly what the planned episode is about. So one day I will remember what that success was and I will write it down and bring it to you in a future week. And I will save the weird dilemma for that week as well. But in the meantime, what actually just happened to me over the last half hour sums up perfectly exactly what I'm talking about today. So today I am talking about how we cannot hate ourselves into success. No amount of me being furious with myself was making me remember what that success of the last week was. And no amount of hating yourself will get you to take prolonged action. And that is the topic I'm talking about this week. So I am really good at berating myself. I'm really good. I've got maybe not a constant narrative of yelling at myself in my own head, but a reasonably consistent one. It's the accompaniment to my life, how terrible I am, how stupid I am, how pointless I am, how useless I am, how rubbish I am. It goes on and on and on in my brain. It's as if I just shout at myself enough, if I just do it for that bit longer, it will work and I will turn into somebody who is not useless and not rubbish and not pointless and all of that. And yet I have had 45 years. Well, I guess I wasn't telling myself how rubbish I was at the age of one, but certainly by the age of four, I was. So let's say I've had 41 years of telling myself how useless and terrible and rubbish I am. And I kind of feel like if it's not worked this far, maybe I need to take that as evidence that it does not work. And I guess the theory, because I know this is not just me, I know that without question. I guess the theory is, well, I can start being nice to myself when I just, and then fill in the blanks, when I've just cleaned up my house, when I've just got organized, when I've just proved myself, then I can start being nice to myself. I'm only being nasty to myself because I am so useless. It's really self-fulfilling. Why are you shouting at yourself? Because I'm useless. It just goes on and on and on. We think it's twofold. We think we deserve it, first of all. Of course I would call myself useless because I'm clearly useless. It's just true. And we also think it will motivate us. We think we can't give ourselves an easy time because if we just keep giving ourselves a hard time, it will push us to do the thing we have been trying and failing to do, or the thing that we've not even tried to do, but we feel we should do. And obviously, in my case, a big part of that is around hoarding. If I just tell myself one more time how disgusting I am for living like this, that will push me to fix it. That will ensure that by this time next week, everything will be fine. And I can't risk not yelling at myself because then I'll stop trying. Whereas if I keep yelling at myself, I deserve that and it will push me into action. That's what we think. It doesn't work. The fact that I still live in a hoarded home demonstrates that yelling at myself about how horrible it is doesn't work. The fact that I'm making some progress is not because I've been yelling at myself. That I can put down to starting to understand myself and starting to give myself a bit of a break mentally and starting to learn about this condition and learn things that can help. It's not like those 41 years of yelling have finally worked. And so even when I have had success, it is not because of the yelling. And this is backed up by research. There have been various studies, and I'm going to talk briefly about two of them that I think highlight the point quite well. There was a 2018 study into athletes, and those athletes that were treated by their coaches with what is referred to as unconditional positive regard, which I will get into, but it's kind of treated with absolute acceptance and support. Those who were treated with unconditional positive regard were more motivated and more confident. But also when there was adversity, when something came up that was difficult, they took on new challenges. They rose to the challenge. And the athletes that were criticized by their coaches were less motivated and more likely to burn out. Now, burnout is one of the things that really gets in the way of some people who've been making really good de-hoarding progress. They burn out. It's hard work and it's long work. And so knowing that criticism coming your way can be make you more likely to burn out is really relevant. And then there was another study about weight discrimination. And basically, the people in the study who had experienced weight discrimination were 2.5 times more likely to gain weight than those who didn't. The study concluded that weight discrimination, which is being treated badly because of your weight, does not motivate people to lose weight. It increases the risk of gaining weight. And both of those cases are, both of those studies look at the way we, the way people are treated by others. But it seems to me, not an academic, not a medic, but it seems to me that if that's how it works when it's about how other people treat us, then it just stands to reason that the way we treat ourselves, when we hear our own inner voice more than anybody else's voice, it's got to have a similar impact. Really having a go at yourself might feel like what you deserve, and it might feel like it's what you need to kick yourself up the bum. It's actually counterproductive. It's counterproductive. And the thing is that makes the fact that it's counterproductive, counterproductive. This is getting meta, but I'll reword that a bit more clearly. The thing that makes this particularly confusing is that we probably all have examples of one time when beating ourselves up did work to motivate us or did work to help us to get something done. We've probably all got that time where we look around ourselves and have a realization and go, this is disgusting. I hate it. I'm disgusting. I hate it. Right. I'm going to sort this out now and maybe do a blitz. And, you know, depending on the way you work, that may be that you cleared out 100 bags or it may be that you cleared out one bag. Doesn't matter. It means that you've got an example in your head of yelling at yourself and then taking action. And that can make us go, well, that's what I need to recreate. I need to do that again. I need to shout at myself again in order to take that kind of action again. It's the only way I can do it. But that is a very short-term thing. It happens very occasionally, and when it does, it does not last. And the thing is, that's quite interesting, is that that happens once and we take it as evidence that it works. But then for every one time that it happens, there are 500 times where we yell at ourselves and it doesn't work. And we don't take that as evidence that it doesn't work. So we let the one time it works prove to us that it's the right course of action. And the 500 times it doesn't work, we feel are kind of incidental and irrelevant. And when you look at it on balance, how often does it work compared to how often does it not work? And if you're like me and you've got this kind of constant critical inner dialogue, you might not even notice it all the time, if at all. And so you might think, you might not think you're doing it, but if you try and kind of track your thoughts sometimes, or just maybe set your phone to ping at a certain time, and when it pings, just ask yourself, what was I thinking just then? And just see just how often it's something self-critical, because it might be that you have a lot of self-critical thoughts, but they're such a kind of, they're so normal to be in your background that you barely even notice they're there. And even when it does work in the short term, the thing with constant self-criticism or any kind of really having a go at yourself, shaming yourself, is it's counterproductive in two key ways. One, it makes you pretty miserable. It's virtually impossible to listen to a soundtrack of how terrible you are for every minute you're awake and not have that affect your mood and your self-esteem to some degree. So to some degree, it's not helping your mood. And that's probably an understatement. But the other thing is that the more terrible you convince yourself you are, the less you're likely to feel that you are somebody who is deserving of a clean home, that you are somebody who is deserving of the mental health support you need to achieve that, to believe that you are deserving of an easier life where you can move around your home and you can answer the door and you're not drowning in stuff. So it's got that kind of double whammy. Constant negative self-talk makes you miserable and it makes you feel like you don't deserve a clean and tidy home. And who is least likely to make an effort with their surroundings? I would say it's the person who is miserable and in any case doesn't believe they deserve a nicer home. So that constant, or even occasional, maybe not everybody has it quite as relentlessly as me, but that kind of abuse that you direct at your very self can't produce long-term change. Otherwise, it already would have done. And any kind of abuse from other people or from yourself does not lead to the kind of mindset that is primed and ready to take action. It does not lead to the kind of mindset that is prepared and ready to dig in on a really big, hard, arduous job, but knowing it's worth it at the end and knowing they deserve the end result. I mean, ask yourself honestly, has shaming yourself, has criticizing yourself worked to this point? Has it got you to where you wanted to be? And especially if you take out those occasional blips, look in the long term, look at sustained action. Has shaming yourself achieved that? Do you want to be a de-hoarding darling? You can be now at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/darling. If you love the podcast and want a bit extra, you can finally sign up to subscribe. Members will get an exclusive monthly post with an additional top tip, some podcast and music recommendations, and a personal update from me about how things are going. Find out the full details at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/darling. So thinking about it in terms of long-term change, I was thinking about school teachers. How when I was at school, there were certain teachers that you always did your homework for. And one group of those teachers were the teachers that you always did your homework for because they were terrifying. They would scream at you. They would humiliate you in front of everybody. They would get you in trouble if you didn't do your homework. So you would think, oh no, I've got Mr. Such and Such tomorrow. Oh no, I've got Miss Such and Such tomorrow. I better do that homework because I saw how he treated Louise last week when she hadn't done hers. I'm not letting that happen. So you did your homework. But did you believe in yourself? Did you pursue that subject in the long term? Did you gain a passion for that subject? Did you learn life lessons that you could apply to other areas of your life? Probably no, 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 and no. You did it because you had to. You did it because the alternative was terrifying. But as soon as that person was no longer your teacher, or as soon as you left school, you probably went, okay, no more physics ever. No more RE ever. It didn't set you up for a lifelong love affair with that subject. And then there was another group of teachers that I always did my homework for. And they were the teachers who gave me passion for my subject. They were the teachers who believed that I could do incredible things without hesitation. They knew I could do it. They absolutely believed I could do it. And they believed the girl sitting next to me could do it. And they believed the boy sitting in front of me could do it. And they were the subjects that I had a long-term investment in. They were the subjects I pursued even when I didn't have to. They were the subjects that I might still be enthusiastic about years and years and years later. They were the subjects that I had a sense of self-belief about. And so while if your inner voice is the yelling teacher, you might get something done, it does not put you in a mindset that sets you on the path for dealing with this in the long term. It puts you in a mindset where the minute you can get away with not doing it, that's what you'll do. Whereas if your inner voice is the second group of teachers, maybe that can set you on a path of self-belief. And maybe when you have some self-belief, you also start actualizing that, you start making that happen. If you believe you can do a thing, you might just go on to do that thing. And let's face it, if you've been the yelling teacher in your own head for 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, look at the evidence for whether that has you living in a neat, clean, tidy, manageable home. And if the answer is no, then consider the fact that that could be not because you're a failure, not because you're rubbish, not because you're useless. It could be that yelling at yourself is not the way to get this to happen. Also ask yourself, is this how you would motivate somebody else? If your best friend was learning to drive and failed her driving test, would you say, oh my God, you're so useless. You're absolutely, this is just ridiculously bad. I don't know how you can show your face. I hope you're ashamed. Well, I hope you wouldn't say that. You would not say that to your best friend. If your child was learning to walk and fell over for the 20th time this hour, would you say, you are so useless at that. I don't know why you're even bothering. This is pointless. You're rubbish. You would not say that. If you would, go get some help. But you wouldn't. Because you know that that's not the way to help somebody achieve something. And you know that it's cruel. Even if being nice to your best friend when she fails a driving test doesn't actively help her pass her next attempt at the driving test, you still would be nice to her about it because you believe that she is a good person who deserves compassion and that failing or passing your driving test isn't a reflection on who she is. And you know that she has many other qualities, even if driving isn't one of them. You would have a million reasons that you could use to reassure her if she fell into that kind of self-berating state of mind because maybe it's the third time she's failed her test. You would still say, no, you're brilliant, you're funny, or you are really clever, or you are an amazing mum, or you would have, for somebody you love, you would have dozens of reasons right there as to why they were a good person. If you were training somebody at work, a new member of staff, and say you work in a shop and they'd never worked in a shop before and they'd never used a till before, and on their fourth customer, they'd forgotten how to do something and they had to call you over and say, I'm really sorry, I've forgotten how to process a cash payment. You wouldn't say, I don't know why they gave you this job. You're clearly useless. You're rubbish. Why on earth are you still here? You're never going to learn. You're never going to get the hang of this. Of course you wouldn't. You would say, oh yeah, the way you do it is you press that and then that. And then if they said, I'm sorry, I'm useless, you would say, everybody has to learn. You know, I was new once and I've done it now 2000 times so I could do it in my sleep. But one day it was my first day as well and I didn't know how to do it. And it doesn't make you a bad person. It just makes you somebody who's learning. We know instinctively that shouting at somebody is not the way to get them to learn confidently. And we also know that shouting at somebody just because they're not brilliant at something or just because they've failed at something is not the humane thing to do. It's not socially acceptable, nor should it be. It's not kind. It's cruel and it's unnecessary, as well as being useless at motivating people or helping people learn something. So we know all of these things, but somehow we don't apply it to the way we talk to ourselves. That seems like we've got an exception clause in our brain. Sure, I wouldn't talk to Jim like that, but it's fine to talk to myself like that. And you know what? It's not. Hearing abuse does nobody any good. And if that comes from somebody else or if it comes from yourself, it's not good for you. It's not good for you. Whether it's self-inflicted or inflicted by somebody else, it's not an acceptable way to be spoken to. We know that we can't help somebody improve themselves by imposing guilt and shame and loathing and disgust on them, because we know it's cruel and because we know it's not the way forward. And if you think that you only deserve to be spoken to nicely when you are achieving or when you're meeting whatever maybe arbitrary standard you've applied on yourself, you are treating yourself in a way that I would really hope you wouldn't let somebody else treat you, and that I really hope you wouldn't treat somebody else. And what I really, really hope is that you start just considering whether it's fair to treat yourself like that and whether indeed it is effective. It is hard to give yourself a break. It is hard, especially if you have a lifetime of talking to yourself with cruelty. It is hard to switch that into a voice that is compassionate, a voice that is empathetic, a voice that is supportive. It feels foreign. It feels unnatural. But the more we try to do it, the less unnatural and the less weird it sounds. And we have to know that in order to do that, it takes guts. It takes not just determination, although yes, determination. It takes courage. It takes a leap of faith, because we are so invested in why we're terrible and we are so invested in talking to ourselves that way. But if we can see ourselves as people worthy of some compassion and some empathy and start to change some of those inner conversations, some of that inner dialogue, we can try it out. We can prove to ourselves that nothing terrible happens. We can maybe check it out with a friend. Say to somebody you really trust, somebody you know loves you, say, so I did this thing the other day. Do you think that makes me a bad person? Or you can say, you can even make it abstract. You can say, if somebody was trying to do something and they weren't managing it very well, would you think they were awful? Check it out. with people you trust, people whose responses you trust, and start trying to change just some of that dialogue.
Now on Broadway, An Enemy of the People is a New York Times critic's pick. Jeremy Strong is one of the great actors of his generation, hails the Chicago Tribune in a performance the Wall Street Journal praises as powerfully affecting and bitterly funny. Michael Imperioli sets off sparks, cheers the Hollywood Reporter. Victoria Pedretti is luminous, raves variety. From director Sam Gold and playwright Amy Herzog, An Enemy of the People is urgent, electrifying, and haunting, declares USA Today. An Enemy of the People on Broadway through June 16th only.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Now, I mentioned earlier unconditional positive regard. I'm going to talk to you about that for a second. So the first counselling I ever had was person-centred counselling, which is a form of counselling invented by a guy called Carl Rogers. And I also, at the time, trained in some person-centred counselling techniques for a project I was working on, which was like a peer support thing. And it was then that I learned about this principle of unconditional positive regard. So a definition from, which I will read from positivepsychology.com, is a general definition is the attitude of complete acceptance and love, whether for yourself or for someone else. When you have unconditional positive regard for someone, nothing they can do could give you a reason to stop seeing them as inherently human and inherently lovable. It does not mean that you accept each and every action taken by the person, but that you accept who they are at a level much deeper than surface behaviour. And that's powerful, isn't it? The idea that even if somebody does bad things, they, as a human, are inherently human. That we can do actions that are not good, but it doesn't stop us as people being good. And this comes into therapy, certainly into person-centered counseling, but I think in a lot of forms of therapy, that the therapist, the counselor, has an attitude of unconditional positive regard to their patients, regardless of what the patient or client has done. And I used to think, well, yeah, but you can have unconditional positive regard for a client who's nice, but can you have unconditional positive regard for a client who's murdered somebody? But the thing is, it's not about liking somebody, and it's not about saying everything that person does and has done and will do is perfect. It's not that at all. It's about a degree of respect for that person's humanity that is unshaking, even if that person still needs to be held accountable for things they do, say, act. And this is useful in therapy, because if you have this sense that your counsellor fully respects you as a person, of course you're more likely to trust them and open up to them. But it also creates an environment, I think, that is just more ripe for healing. It creates the circumstances that are needed for a person to heal. Because if you treat somebody with contempt, they shut down. It reinforces to them that they're a terrible person. Say they cheated on their partner. Say they spent all their savings. Whatever they've done. Unconditional positive regard treats somebody as a fallible human and respects and loves their humanity in a way that makes them less defensive, in a way that makes them less likely to just shut down and bring in dysfunctional safety behaviors, and will instead create an environment of safety where the dysfunctional stuff can start, you can start to chip away at that. And I'm not a therapist, but I'm really interested in how we can treat ourselves that way and say, just like we would to our kid or our friend, okay, you shouldn't have stolen those sweets. Okay, you shouldn't have cheated on your partner. Okay, you shouldn't have told that lie. But it doesn't stop you being a lovable human. It's something that you shouldn't have done. But you're still you, and you're still good, and you can still be a good person, and you can still change if you need to. And if we build that in our own treatment of ourselves, that feels so powerful to me, because it doesn't mean that we're not holding ourselves accountable. It doesn't mean that we're taking no responsibility for our actions. It doesn't mean that we're taking no responsibility for our inaction. It's just about taking the venom out of it, taking the hate out of it, and saying, okay, living like this is making my kids' lives difficult, so I need to address it. Rather than living like this is making my kids' lives difficult, that's why I am a living monster who does not deserve any nice things. I am horrific, and I deserve every bad thing in the world. We don't need all of that venom. We just need the accountable bit. Living like this is making my kids' lives difficult. I need to change. Living like this is annoying my neighbours. I need to take responsibility for that. Living like this is making my own life 20 times harder than it needs to be. I need to address that. We can still look at what needs to be done and take action, but we can remove the spite and the meanness and the cruelty from that inner dialogue. And that, I am convinced, puts us in a position that is not only one where your own brain is less hostile, but it is also one where the conditions that are needed to make those changes are nurtured. You don't have to adore everything about yourself. You don't have to praise every little thing you do. You don't have to yell about how much you love yourself. I mean, you can, but you don't have to. It's more about calling a truce. Call a truce with your own being. We need to stop buying into this idea that we are worthy because of what we achieve or what we accomplish or what we win at. And remember that we are worthy. And that's where the sentence ends. We are worthy, full stop. We don't need to justify our existence with, yeah, but, yeah, I would be a good person if I did this. I would be a good person if I stopped doing that. I would be, no. You might have behaviors you want to change. You might have feelings that you wish were different. You might live in a way that you wish was different. That can all be true at the same time as it being true that screaming internally at yourself about what a failure you are does nothing to help you. Now, this is absolutely a work in progress for myself, as evidenced by my reaction to not being able to remember what my success of the week was. I'm working on it. I'm really working on it. And it is so ingrained that I almost don't know what a soundtrack, an internal soundtrack, is like if it's not generally wittering on about what a failure I am. But what I'm trying to do, and what is good regardless, is to recognize and mark achievements. Doesn't have to be a big announcement. You don't need a medal, you know. But just say to yourself, "Ah, I got a couple more bags out today than I thought I would. Nice one." Or, "I wasn't sure I was ever going to be able to get rid of that cookbook, and now I have, and well done me." It can be doing a little air punch. It can be getting that daft app on your phone and making it do applause. It can be just a little smile to yourself when you're in the supermarket and you resist the thing that you're tempted to buy. Just recognize the bits you're doing well, first of all, and acknowledge them, even just to yourself. And also think in terms of your purpose or your goals. If instead of motivating yourself with, "I've got to do this because I'm terrible," if instead you could say, "I'm going to do this because I want my life to be different," it's gentler and it's kind of more persuasive. Because remember what I said at the start, we've kind of proven to ourselves that negative self-talk doesn't achieve the change we're looking for. So maybe we do need to try this and just see whether this helps instead. Because we know for sure the other doesn't help. Maybe this will. And whether it works or not in terms of helping you de-hoard your home, you deserve to be spoken about more respectfully. I make this podcast because I think it's important. I started it as an outlet for myself, but it's become much more than that. And I hear from people all the time about how listening to me talk about my experience and interview specialists and experts is helping them. Hearing those stories makes the time and cost absolutely worth it. But if you want to help to ensure that the future of the podcast is sustainable, you can donate to help with costs. To send a one-off or recurring donation, just go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/donate. Thank you. So a lot of you loved my interview with Casey Davis in episode 82, Casey of Struggle Care fame. And for my top tip this week, I am going to play a little clip from when she was a guest on the Poised and Powerful Parenting podcast, which I like that alliteration. Poised and Powerful Parenting podcast. Have a listen to what she's got to say about comparison.
Well, and what's funny is that, you know, we're always comparing, you know, when I first got sober, the line or the quote that always stuck in my head is that, you know, I'm always comparing my insides to everybody else's outsides, mm-hmm. you know, how I feel about myself. And then I look at somebody who looks like they like themselves and I'm thinking, mm-hmm. ugh, see, they're better. When the reality is I don't know what that person's thinking or feeling or what their life is. And a few years after that, I heard somebody put it. They said, we're always comparing our behind the scenes cuts to somebody else's highlight reel. And I feel like that's especially applicable to the social media age. I see the inside of my house. I know what it looks like Monday through Sunday. I know what the banana that my kids had for lunch 2 days ago may still be sitting on the counter or something like that. But then I look at somebody else's social media feed and I see this beautifully curated space. But the reality is I don't know what's right outside of that camera lens. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many bananas they pushed over to the side. And even if they didn't, even if their house looks exactly like that, I don't know what kind of privileges or barriers that person has. I don't know how they would be showing up in life if they had the same privileges or barriers as I do. So it's just kind of a fool's errand to set your own worthiness according to the information you get from what people are offering you about their lives.
And I think that's a really good point. Let me know what you think. Okay, thank you for listening, and I will speak to you next time. Thank you for listening to the Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder podcast. You can find more online at overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk. You can find me on Twitter at That Hoarder, and on Facebook at Overcome Compulsive Hoarding with That Hoarder. To find out more about how you can support the podcast and the overall project, go to overcomecompulsivehoarding.co.uk/support and do subscribe to the podcast to make sure you don't miss any future episodes.